Good morning, good almost afternoon. It's nice to be here and welcome to everyone online. I thought I would start with the quote that's on the bulletin today from Julian of Norwich. And oh, okay, thank you. Yeah, Tim told me I need to get closer to the microphone. I thought I'd start with the quote from Julian of Norwich. And for those of you who don't know her, she's a 14th century Christian mystic. And the quote that came to me today is, "The fullness of joy is to behold God in everything. God is the ground, the substance, the teaching, the teacher, the purpose, and the reward for which every soul labors." So I'm really happy to be here. And for those of you who don't know me as well, I am a North Carolina native. I have a PhD in literature in the history of abolitionist movements from Duke, which is where I met my husband, who studies race in the Middle Ages. That'll be important in a second. And our daughter is 8. I am a rebellious lefty do-gooder raised by Reagan Republicans. And I work today as a coach and a consultant, helping organizations build equity and promote anti-racism. So when I write sermons for Calvary, I often rely on my intellectual and professional experience. And I read one of the Bible quotes and I just kind of see where that goes. But this week, it was actually not one of the quotes as much as it was Pastor Tim's sermon from last week that inspired me. So I asked him to send it to me. So I'm going to start by quoting Pastor Tim. So this is what he said last week, if you weren't here. "We know from our reading that Herod asks the wise men to return to him after they find Jesus so they can tell him where he is. We don't know, and they don't know at that point that Herod actually intends to kill him. And so, warned in a dream, they don't go back to Herod. They don't go back the way they came. They go by another road, the road less traveled. The road that literally changes the narrative." So that was Pastor Tim. I want to talk to you today about changing the narrative, about dreams and intuition, and the way that opacity, and I'm thinking about opacity in a particular way, of allowing something to be condensed and not maybe not completely understood. I want to talk about how that motivates the work that I do. And I'd like to start off by saying that I do have a very intellectual scientific training, and I also work in a space of interconnectedness and feelings and intuition. So when Tim mentioned that the wise men knew to do something because of a dream, that they turned intuition into reality, a positive reality that ultimately protected Jesus, I thought about this tension. And it reminded me of this Netflix documentary on dreams that I saw a few months ago. They interviewed psychologists and neurologists about what dreams are and what they've been able to study. And they were talking about how we know so much more about them because of brain scans and other advanced technology. And they really spoke condescendingly about old ideas that God spoke to us in dreams. And the message was that science has taken us a long way of understanding what really goes on, the blood vessels and the neurons and REM sleep. And we get so caught up in the details that there's really no room for stories like that of the wise men who knew to do something based on a dream, on intuition, or some spiritual connection. So the idea is that we used to cook up answers and say, "Oh, it was God," when we didn't really understand it, but now we get it. Now we understand it. So there's this story of eternal progress and the way it's connected to scientific study. It's so fundamental to our Western colonial white supremacist worldview that we often don't question it. And this is where having a PhD in Caribbean literature is pretty useful. So I started off today, one of the other quotes that I put in here is a quote by Edouard Glissant, and he is a philosopher that I adore. He's from Martinique. He passed away in 2011. So when I was doing my PhD, he was still alive and writing. But this is a quote that I love from him. And he says, "True comprehension comes from a focus on the texture of the weave rather than the nature of its parts." So Gleason invites us to try to stop trying to pull everything apart into its tiniest details. This is, he argues, almost like a European compulsion, driven by the idea that dismantling is what it means to understand. So Gleason asks us to reverse this, to instead look at the weave, the way it all connects together, in order to understand the way the world works. And it doesn't mean at all that there's no value in our current scientific methods of inquiry, but what it does mean is maybe not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So dreams and a trusting of intuition led the wise men away from Herod. And maybe we don't need to find the neuron in their brains that made it happen in order to trust that it did. So this is where I like to talk about being an empath. And what I mean by this is that I tend to get a lot of information about people's stuff, and it comes in viscerally, often without my conscious knowledge. For a long time, I didn't really do very much with it. I didn't really talk about it. But in the past couple of years, I've embraced it and I'm learning to work with it. And it's actually my proof of interconnectedness. So with my clients, I like to describe humans as a huge forest of trees, and there's a root system. Gleason calls this the rhizome that connects all of us. And as an empath, I sometimes focus my attention down in the root system and I forget that I'm a tree. And thanks to the methods of meditation and visualization that I work with, I feel a lot more in control of this now. And what I've learned to do is kind of take something in as just information rather than having to feel it in my body. But for a while, this was like kind of like a weird party trick. And one of the most common things that happens to me as an empath is that I get information about other people's physical pain. So for example, my colleague a few years ago, I was Zooming and he was getting ready to have hip surgery. And I asked him which hip, but before he could answer right, I felt a sensation in my right hip. And I was like, oh yeah, it's your right hip. And this happened with my cousin who broke her arm and my friend who broke his ribs. And Cords was telling me a story about his boss who broke her toe. Like, I always know whether it's right or left. So as you imagine, like, getting this amount of information about people all day long is not always pleasant. And for those who live in a world where it's not believed or shunned or you know, some people might feel kind of crazy or ashamed. But now I really learned to work with it. And I feel a lot of gratitude about it. So there's something out there, some level of interconnectedness that is vast and amazing. And so what I've learned to do is accept and appreciate the connections and take it on as information, not necessarily as anything that about me or anything that I really have to do anything about. So what it is for me is a reminder that we're all threads in this giant tapestry. So, and I hear Gleason in my head, right? The real understanding is about the texture of the weave. So for me, being an empath is a particular type of a direct experience of intuition of the interconnectedness of all human beings. And there's really no scientific means by which I could prove my experience is true. But to get back to what Pastor Tim's lovely invitation was last week, is to think about the way that a dream changed the narrative. Accepting my experience as an empath and engaging with it and working with it has really helped me validate this experience for others and to work with intuition on a whole new level. So I have two stories that I want to share about this. The first dates back to the spring when I was visiting some friends in New Haven, Connecticut. And this is a city where there's a lot of people experiencing homelessness. So it's pretty common to have people ask you for money. And when I'm with Linda, my daughter, I like to give her a dollar and have her hand it to the person who's asking for money because she's always invested in this. So we pulled up, so it was just the two of us, and we pulled up to a grocery store parking lot. And I just knew that somebody was going to ask us for money. So I was like, okay, well, I'll get a dollar out and I'll put it in my pocket so it'll be ready. And we went into the store, we got our shopping cart, went around, got our stuff. Linda was playing with the shopping cart. Nothing happened. Nobody asked us anything. We came back, you know, came back to the car, put the stuff back in the car. Again, didn't see anybody. And I thought, oh, that was weird because I just knew that something was going to happen. So we're getting ready to back up and I turn around and Linda was putting on her seatbelt. And as soon as I turned back around after looking at that, there was a man standing at the window of my car. And I was like, oh, there you go. So I rolled down my window and I handed him the dollar. Now let's think about all the scientific ways that I could explain this interaction. First of all, it's not unusual to run into a homeless person. It had happened before. I could have pulled out of the parking lot place sooner. I could have missed him. I could rationalize all of it as nothing but coincidence. But what I would be doing would be looking for the neuron in the brain of the wise man. And I would miss the world that Julian of Norwich is describing. So sometimes this level of interconnectedness gives us information that is useful, and we might never be able to define or see where it's coming from. So this is what I think is the usefulness of opacity. Opacity requires humility and it evokes gratitude. I can feel thankful for that moment and for that experience of something that is beyond me. And I have one more story to share with you. And this is a story about kind of connecting to just some aspect of ourselves that is far greater than what we can measure. So this summer, Cord, my husband, London, and I were able to travel back to France. And France is where I used to live. And when I was 20 years old, I stood on a hill overlooking a bunch of olive trees. And the photo that you all have today on the bulletin is that scene. And it was, again, like one of those moments, kind of like the guy in the parking lot, where I just knew that if I have a girl, I'm going to name her Olivia. And if I have a boy, I'll name him Olivier. And Olivier is the word for olive tree in French. And so London is London Olivia Grace. And so it was important for me to take her back to this hill. But I actually didn't really remember where it was. I'm telling Cord, I'm like, I'm pretty sure that it's in Les Baux-de-Provence. And Les Baux-de-Provence is this gorgeous medieval city that's on a hill and a mountain, and it's really beautiful. And so so we decide to go. And all these things are kind of moving around us. Like, we were going to go on Wednesday, but then we ended up having to go on Thursday. It was still really, really hot. London wore flip-flops, so she didn't want to walk. And, you know, so it wasn't like the most like ideal scene. And at one point I kept looking down over and I thought, no, this isn't the hill. This isn't the hill. So I'm almost ready to give up. But Cord was like, no, let's keep going. We're going to go all the way up to the top of this city, which is where the castle was. So we go up to the castle, we look over it, and indeed that is the hill. And then I was able to take the picture. And I got pictures of London with the hill. And so it was a really beautiful moment, but that's not all. So then we figured out that this city is actually a city that was run by princes in the 1400s who believed themselves and called themselves descendants of Balthazar, who is the wise man who said to be from Africa. And so my husband, who studies race in the Middle Ages, Balthazar is a central figure in his research. Because when you see these images from the Middle Ages, he's depicted very much with African features, sub-Saharan African features that we would know to be such today. So turns out that now I'm just talking, so I gotta find where I was, that my husband's daughter is named after the olive trees around a city in southern France that happened to be related to these wise men that was so connected to his research that he started doing before he even ever met me, right? But there's more to it. So as we walk down the hill and pass by this carving of Balthazar on the street, Cord realized that he had seen this image in a presentation by his friend, who is also a professor. So he took a picture of it and he texted it to her, and she was in New York. And he said, "Hey, look where I am." And she wrote back and said, "Oh my God, Cord, my computer just crashed and I lost all my images of this picture. Can you send them to me?" So he's like, "Okay, great." So he took all these images and he sent them to her. And then one of the things I realized after we left, we got back to the Airbnb where we were staying, and I checked Facebook, and I realized that day that we went was July 21st, and a friend of mine whose father had just passed away posted that was his father's birthday. And this friend of mine, his daughter's name is Olivia. So you can kind of like see the web. I'll finish today by saying that, sure, I could write all of these series of events off as coincidences. And I could tell you that because I can't find the neuron that created this experience, that it doesn't change the narrative. Instead, though, I choose opacity, because I'm going to focus on the tapestry and not the threads. Because when I do, I see the beauty of what connects us. And so this is how I work and move in the world, not divided between science and intuition, but hoping to build a bridge between them so that I can take the road less traveled and truly see what connects us. So last week, Pastor Tim admitted that his call to action might be somewhat Pollyanna, because there wasn't anything necessarily concrete about it. But we can make things concrete, we can make them opaque through this blend of intuition and opacity. So we get to make the tapestry visible when we choose to see it. Thank you.